Dáme čaj. So, dear friends, today is March 5th, 2011. We are at the Dharmaklang Monastery. This is our day of mindfulness. 2 weeks ago, we had a day of mindfulness with Thay Tridak, who came from California. And we learned about Zen and Pure Land practice. So on that day was irregular because we're supposed to have our day of mindfulness 2 weeks before that because of his schedule. So today again we have a day of mindfulness. This is our regular monthly day of mindfulness. And the practice will be never enough. Nowadays we are our society is very busy and we practice, our practice is very limited. I think 2 nights ago I watched a document and they were filming a document in Nepal, in all the cave. And the mountain is so high up and then there's cave and all the practitioner practice there, and they climb up there, and I was amazed that. And there's still imprint left, and the sutra is still there. It's kind of burning half, and there is many image of the Buddha and Bodhisattva on the cave still there, and it's so high up, and you know the climber they have from the U.S. they go over there, they have to use the rope and. In order to climb up, but I don't know during that time how they could get up there and they practice and get their food. I think they have power. Otherwise, you know, how can they get up there? It's so high and the mountain is so stiff like this. And they could, and in that cave, you see there are many practitioners, but they all pass away. I didn't see any practitioners still alive there, but the residue, whatever they practice, still there. And there's sutra, Tibetan sutra, still there. It's kind of half burning, and there's many of the things they use during that time. And when I watch that, give me a lot of thinkings about how dedicated, you know, they practice day and night. And in their practice, they dedicate for the whole life. So nowadays we practice this like off and on, and very our time is very limited, and we are so busy with many other things. So we just practice just soothing some of our chaotics. We don't really practice the point that they really 100% dedicate to their awakening. And that's why nowadays to find someone really awake, really fully, then it's really hard. We can find someone that, you know, practice a certain amount of time a day, but really to dedicate 24 hours to their practice, that's hard. And the Buddha said that this is the time that a million people practice, maybe no one really fully realized. It's really hard. Because our practice is so slack off, that we practice just only our practice very surfacing. You know, we don't really care that much. Even though the pain, the suffering is still there, our time of suffering, the same suffering as they have before. Maybe at that time they have made a little bit of less material, but their mind is much less burden. But now we always enwrap ourselves around the material. So that's our practice. It's not very strong. So when I think of that, and I feel sorry for myself, and that's give me like more motivation in my practice, you know, motivation in the practice. So today is my topic to share with you is the four noble qualities, the three noble qualities of three refuge, three noble refuge. And I invent another three conventional four refuge. When you practice, you have some insight. So the first thing, so the four conventional refuge and three noble refuge from Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. When you practice, you will see. And when we do the walking meditation, I walk across. Did you see the banner up by the fire station? They say, fight for light, fight for life. Did you see the banner across, the red banner? Fight for life. And I thought, at that moment, my thought gave rise to walk for life. Because we are walking. So we walk for life. What the fire station, they say, fight for life. And at that moment, it clicked me back to the story I read this morning, right away. So to start out with, I will have Mark to read the story they call Power of Determinations. It's short. Yeah, this one. Yeah, it's good. It's short.
The Power of Determination. The little country schoolhouse was heated by an old-fashioned pot-bellied coal stove. A little boy had the job of coming to school early every day to start the fire and warm the room before his teacher and his classmates arrived. One morning, they arrived to find the schoolhouse engulfed in flames. They dragged the unconscious little boy out of the flaming building, more dead than alive. He had major burns over the lower half of his body and was taken to the nearby county hospital. From his bed, the dreadfully burned, semi-conscious little boy faintly heard the doctor talking to his mother. The doctor told his mother that her son would surely die, which was the best, really, for the terrible fire that had devastated the lower half of his body. But the brave boy didn't want to die. He made up his mind that he would survive. Somehow, to the amazement of the physician, he did survive. When the mortal danger was past, he again heard the doctor and his mother speaking quietly. The mother was told that since the fire had destroyed so much flesh in the lower part of his body, it would be almost better if he had died, since he was doomed to be a lifetime cripple who, with no use at all of his lower limbs. Once more, the brave boy made up his mind. He would not be a cripple. He would walk, but unfortunately, from the waist down, he had no motor ability. His thin legs just dangled there, all but lifeless. Ultimately, he was released from the hospital. Every day his mother would massage his little legs, but there was no feeling, no control, nothing. Yet his determination that he would walk was as strong as ever. When he wasn't in bed, he was confined to a wheelchair. One Sunday, his mother wheeled him out into the yard to get some fresh air. This day, instead of sitting there, he threw himself from the chair. He pulled himself down across the grass dragging his legs behind him. He worked his way to the white picket fence bordering their lot. With great effort, he raised himself up on the fence. Then, stake by stake, he began dragging himself along the fence, resolved that he would walk. He started to do this every day until he wore a smooth path all around the yard beside the fence. There was nothing he wanted more than to develop his life on these legs. Ultimately, through his daily massages, his iron persistence, and his resolute determination, he did develop the ability to stand up, then to walk haltingly, then to walk by himself, and then to run. He began to walk to school, then to run to school, to run for the sheer joy of running. Later in college, he made the track team. Still, later in Madison Square Garden, this young man was not expected to survive, who would surely never walk, who would never hope to run. This determined young man, Dr. Glenn Cunningham, ran for the world's fastest mile.
Thank you. So that the story that I just read this morning, and it's coincidentally fit to my Dharma talk. And when I decided I might not share this story. But when we walked, and I saw they say fight for life, and then it clicked me and say I should read this story. And the power of determination he wanted to walk, right? He wanted to walk because when he was healthy, he didn't realize that his feet was there for him. But until the moment that he got burned by the fire, but now he wants to take refuge in his feet, right? Did you ever realize that your feet is a place that you take refuge? We never think, because when we're healthy, we never pay attention to our feet, that our feet is a place that we can take refuge. Right? Day in and day out, walk from here to there. And you don't realize that it's that moment you are really happy that you have a strong and healthy feet. It's a place until something happens. And you come to regret that during my time of healthy feet, I never enjoy that my feet is there. I never take care of my feet. Just like this boy, right? But finally he get back his determinations that one day I will walk. The doctors would think that, you know, is to this degree of burning, your son will be never able to walk again. But he made in his own mind say that, no, I will be able to walk again. And he made it. You imagine, when I read the story, the boy was in front of me. And then when he crawled to the fence and tried to hold on that fence and tried to make himself walk. Imagine that he couldn't do anything, just only two hands, and just tried to hold on the fence and making one step at a time. Imagine that. That picture was there when I read the story. His leg was dangling, you know, because paralyzed. It's numb. So his leg was dangling while his body tried to hold onto the fence. So that's a fit into my, I say that, taking refuge in the four conventional quality. That's the 14 I was sharing with you. And then after that, I will share with you taking refuge in the four noble, in the threes, noble qualities. So the first thing that you eat taking refuge in the conventional world is our body. We take refuge. Our body is a place that we take refuge, right? Our mother and our father give us this body, right? And while we're in this life we have here, we have to take refuge in the body. In the body. That's conventional, because this body maybe lasts, can be from 1 year to 100 years. It depends how you take care of your body. This is conventional. So you live, you take care. If you take care of your body well, your body is healthy. If you abuse the body, then you will be in pain or suffering. For example, like those who abuse their body by taking drugs, stay late at night, use alcohol. So that's the people who have the body but abuse the body. So one day the body will get ill or sick, right? So that they abuse the body, they don't take refuge. So this body is a place that you take refuge. So when you practice, if you was to very ill, and then it's hard for you to practice, right? If your leg was very unhealthy, then it's hard for you to take a walk. It's hard for you to do the walking meditations, right? So the leg is part of the body. So you take refuge in that. But if we don't know, we live in forgetfulness, then we do whatever that can be a dangerous for the legs, right? And one day your leg is paralyzed or crippled, then you sit there and you condemn or you blame externally someone that done it for you. See? That's normally how we do. If something happened to us and we don't look back how we take care of ourselves, but we go and condemn or blame, right? So you have to, when you practice awareness or mindfulness, then you know how to take care of your body. Because you know that it's a place that you can take refuge. If your joy, your happiness is depend on how healthy your body is. Our body here is consider the whole body, from head to toes. Right? If you don't take care of your mental, then you had many mental problems. If you drink too much, the night before you get drunk, the next day you get so headache. You experience that? I experienced one time where I got so drunk. And the next few days my head is so, I got so much headache. And people continue that, and then I stop. I say it's no good. I got so drunk when I was teen. And I know that I abused my mental. And every time you get drink, and the next day you feel so dizzy, you feel so heavy. So if you practice awareness, you say that, oh, it's not good for me already. But nobody, you know, you got drink one time, next time, and you just continue abusing your mentality. And many of us, it's happened to many of us. So you don't know that that's a place, a safe place for you to take refuge. If you get hate, and then you don't think clearly, and you make a stupid decision. You can joy and you hit someone, right? Because you suffer so much. Sometimes you get a migraine, for example, and you get so, and you don't have a clarity in your mind. See? So if you was to relax, you know, if you said, "Oh, I had a migraine headache, so I better." I try somehow that I sit down, lay down, and send some love energy to my head. And say, I know you are, I know you're ill, so I'm there for you. See? You send some loving kindness to your head, to your brain. You soothe it. You naturally healing your brain. Right? But if you don't know, then you just continue abusing it. So the body is a place that you take refuge conventionally, because this body maybe can last a year, the most 100 years. That's why I say conventionally, because there is a surface condition, so this body is manifest. But there is, when the condition is lack, an insufficient condition, then this body will deteriorate, right? So you know that it's conventional. So you know, as a practitioner, we use this body as a, the Buddha said, as a raft that carry you across the shore to the shore of happiness. If you know how to use it, ultimately, and this is all the yogi, all the practitioner, spiritual, they know how to use the body to carry this raft, to carry them to the shore of ultimate happiness. Right? But we nowadays, we eat so much, the thing that we eat, that we abuse our body. You don't know. The thing that you can see, right? The thing that you hear, and you abuse this body. So you have to know the place to take care. So the body is a place for you to take refuge. Your hand, you know? It's a place where you take refuge. Now it's very helpful to have two hands, you know, and then you can hold something. But imagine that you have only one hand, and sometimes you try, it's in the back, it's kind of itching, and you try to scratch it, but one hand couldn't, some place that you couldn't reach. There's a man who is have two hands cut off. Ambulate, and he was itching and he don't know what to do. He started moving, he was laughing, and he just laugh, and there's a pastor, there's a man who walk by and say, why are you laughing so much? And say he just laugh and say this man, and later on he cry, and the man is no why. Sometimes he cries, so he laughs, and sometimes he cry, and he come and. And the passing by and say, what happened? I say, can you scratch my back? He tried to do what he couldn't do with me. You see? So when our body, we have perfect body, then you know, take care. Take care doesn't mean that you indulge in it. But take care in the place so that you can be healthy, you can practice. So we are not all the time healthy, you know that? At a certain age, you pass 50, you know that your body is deteriorating very fast. And those of you who are past 50, you know. Your body and your mind stay by day, and some days hot, some days cold. You know it. When I was 25 up to, I worked like endlessly, never tired. But now I know that if I work 8 hours or more, my body is not able to bear. But before that, I worked, never got tired. But slowly, by now I'm past 40, so I know that my body is slowly. So we have to realize that at a certain time that your body is healthy, then you should be dedicated, should work and dedicated to your practice. And we all go through the process of life like that. Nobody, no exceptions. Don't mean that you're healthy today, tomorrow. It's not uncertainty that you'll be healthy. You know? So we have to be, live constant in that kind of awareness. And value. And take precious. And when you have that attention, when you have mindfulness, then everything you do is become a precious thing to do. A precious moment that you can do. So body is one place that you conventionally you can take refuge. What is the next conventional thing that you can take refuge in? So when you practice, you really practice, you see a lot of things. You have a lot of insight in the practice. Body now is your beloved one, right? Beloved one of your family, right? Your beloved one, someone that you love, or your family, someone that's close to you. So for example, when you are sick, and then someone in your family take care of you. Right? If you have a partner be there for you. But conventionally, if he really loves you, that's why I say it's conventional. It's really he. Sometimes it's your partner, but pretend to be there. And sometimes it's become a burden. Right? A burden. So that's why I say it's conventional. Someone that you share. Right. But when you're healthy, everything is fine. But when you are become a cripple, you're paralyzed, become a burden for them. And a burden for yourself and for them too. And at the moment, maybe first few months, he's there all the time. And slowly he withdraws day by day. A long distance, you know? It's not that. It's your family. But it's good to have too. It's got a family and a place that you can take refuge. And some family that you can take refuge, some family become a hell place. Cold. You go there, it's like hell. Right? Some family. But I don't say that the rest. Many. That's why you got 50% divorce, because you don't want to go to that place. At first you love them dearly, and then slowly somehow that you become enemy. Have you ever realized that? Enemy. They never want to hear your word. They don't want to hear your voice. They don't want to see you. Something like that. But at least there is some place that some family is really good family, a cozy family, and you can take refuge. But it's temporary. Temporary. One day you have to work for yourself. So you have to be strong. You have to be strong to be a refuge for others also, right? In a moment of turbulence, in a moment of catastrophe, then you have to be strong mentally and physically to be a refuge for some, for that person, for someone in your family, right? But if you were very ill in your own stage, mentality, then physically, then it's hard for someone to take refuge. So mental is very important, very important. So what is this one and two and number three? You think that what did you take refuge in?
Job.
Mm-hmm. This called possessions or positions, okay. Something that belong to you. Job or house, for example. It's a house, a place that you can take refuge in, right? Conventional. Maybe your car. Right? This place that you can take refuge. If your house is burned down, then your car is a place that you take refuge. This can give you, you know, transport you from one place to another. And if you have a job, a good job, but it's very shaky nowadays. In this time of economic, and even your job is very shaky. We have a house here, but who knows? One day we have a fire and this house burned down. It's kind of very shaky, right? We don't know. We have some of our members in Boulder, the house burned out completely. Maybe your clothes can be your refuge too. Because if it's too cold outside, then this jacket is a place that you take refuge. But conventionally, temporary, take refuge in that. That's why I say that's conventional. So you know that it's conventional, so you take care of it, but don't grasp into it. You have the right to take care, but don't grasp. Use it fully while it's there for you. If the house is here, we use fully, we take care of it. But one day, if suddenly something happens, burned out, we all go to outside and sit outside and have a Dharma talk. Right? But we're happy. We know that it's impermanent. Things change. We don't know. You don't know what will happen. Right? Our world today is very shaky. Economically, even the weather. Things change because of the global warming, because of our economic situations. What do you think? This hard one. If you think, if you practice, you know that. The fourth one of conventional taking refuge. If you...
Religion?
Breath. So, breathing is one, conventional, but the thing that I was talking about in my mind may be a little bit different.
Food
is something that possessions. Mm-hmm. You practice, you contemplate, you see what you take. It's more long lasting than the three. More longer lasting. It's be with you.
Your mind, the dharma.
No, the karma.
Karma.
Energy. Yes. This is the fourth thing I contemplate. Karmic energy. The accent. Yeah. It belongs to you. It's conventional. But you take refuge in that wherever you go. You see? You take refuge in that. If you do wholesome thing, wholesome will be with you, right? Something good will be with you. If you do something not wholesome, then you also, because it's happened, then you take refuge in that. It's happened to you. And in Buddhism, we very much talking about karmic energy. Sometimes it's laden, it's kind of hidden. It's no form, but it's there. So even we all here, we each of us here, we have our own individual karmic energy that we take refuge in. You sit here, but internally each of you feel different. Some of you feel a little bit more settled, some of you feel a little bit across of settled, some of you feel not very settled. But you take refuge into that. Karmic energies. It's a place that you take refuge. It's more long lasting than it's go with you everywhere. Day and night. If you sit there, it'll be there. It's like a shadow. It's be there. But didn't tell that it's there. But you know it's there. How you feel, how you think. It's work with you, it's be there with you. How is your intentions? Your attention is there. So that's why I hate a place that we take refuge to. It's more subtle than the other three. So this is it's conventional. This one go in between, no, conventional and unconventional. Because when you pass away, for example, when the moon, our last breath, our karma is go with that. Our karma go with that. That is the only things you can take with you. This is what I say. It's your ground where you stand. If you plant seed, of Dharma, state of Dharma, will be good with you. It may have no form, but in your consciousness, that's kind of energy that go with you. If you meditate every day, and you generate energy of calmness, then energy of calmness, and the moment you, this body is deteriorating, then you have that with you. And you will not take over by the energies of the energies of fear or the energies of confusions, but you have that energy of calmness with you. That's why we practice. We practice, we prepare ourselves for this moment and for many moments to come. That's why we meditate. We generate that. So that habit, that calmness energy will be with you the moment. And you have a total of acceptance of this body, because you know you develop so much conviction that this body is going to deteriorate. So it's a natural flow, and you accept it. And the moment you accept, and you less, 50% of pain is less. 50% of pain is less. Okay, that is the four conventional refuge that we take in our everyday life. Now,
do you include under beloved one, like just friends?
Yeah, friends, relative. So this beloved one can be someone, neighbor too. You know, a neighbor. If you have a good neighbor, they can be your, you know, a place that you can take refuge to. Because if you have something, certainly you can at some. Your family is far along, far away, you know, and you just call. It's like here, I just called John. I said, John, my car is broke down. And he come that right away.
Animals too, I think.
Yes, animal like dog. If you know, if the dog, you can see already, they can rescue you when in the moment of you know, emergencies. Animal. If you have a tiger will protect you from robbery or from. Like that, you know. So it's loved one is very broad, you know. Can be your friends, can be your relatives, can be your neighbors, can be your partner, can be your children, someone that you have trust in them, and they can temporarily support you. Or a place that you can take refuge. Your son, your daughter. Any question on this? Four conventional place of taking refuge. So now we move further to the path of the Dharma. So the next one, three noble qualities that I want to share with you. They call noble qualities of taking refuge. Why is Buddha is we call it a noble place to take refuge?
I think that's a question.
Questionable? Why?
Because I've been thinking about mm-hmm. just the word refuge, mm-hmm. you know, that's the way it's translated. How would you describe taking refuge?
Mm-hmm. Taking refuge? A place that you feel safe whenever you think of that place. An energy that you feel safe.
Safe from what?
Safe from all dangers, from fear, from anxiety, from worries, from catastrophe. And you think of that and you feel safe already. Because that place or that energy never betray you.
Could you say safe from suffering?
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Save you some suffering, some pain when you think of that. And you know that this person or this never judge you, never betray you, even though you do something wrong, even though they will hold your hand and say, come, I will help you to cross the shore of pain or suffering. In Christianity, they have three noble places to take refuge. You know where that is in Christianity? Trinity, three Trinity. Trinity, like Father, Son, and Spirit, Holy Spirit. In Krishna, they have three noble places for them too. In Hindu, you have three triple gems, Krishna. Do you have Krishna and Vishnu, and who else? Three.
Shiva.
Mm-hmm. You have also we call triple gems, three treasures. Treasure place. And you have a question? No. So why we call Buddha is a safe place to take refuge?
He's compassionate.
Because he is the one that already know the path, right? Completely know the path. He crossed all paths of this path, the path of suffering, the path of causing suffering, the path of cessation, and the way to that safe place. The complete enlightened person. And he always looked out to sentient beings with the eyes of compassion. Right? So he saw us the way. To the path, so is the way. So in Sanskrit they say Buddham, Saranam, Gacchami, you know that? It's that I go to take refuge in the Buddha. In Pali, in the Theravada traditions, every time they say that. Buddha, Buddham, Saranam, Gacha Ami. That means I go to take refuge in the Buddha. So every time they read that every time. And in Mahayana traditions too, every before we end the sutra, we say I go to the Buddha and take refuge. And then slowly, do you remember the refuge chain? I take refuge the Buddha in myself. That's the important part. So we have so in Vietnamese we have to the tam bảo. You okay?
Yeah.
Be careful. That means these three jewels always drown in the world. Do, I mean, drowning. Drowning. Do, tri. Drown in these three triple gems always drown in the world. The Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, the historical Buddha. Sakyamuni Buddha. Sakyamuni Buddha. He's drowned in this world here. Even though he passed away, but the Dharma is still there. And the Sangha is still there. So that's why Do Tri Tam Bảo. Do the Thế Giang này. Drowned in this world. Do Tri Tam Bảo. Drowned in this world. And we have Buddha and we have then Dharma, right? Dharma is, so Buddha is the quality of what? You have to understand this here. Buddha is the qualities of awakening, right? Awakening. That is what you're taking refuge in. Taking in the refuse in the quality of awakening. When you're awake, the dogma is over, right? When you have in the middle of the night, you have a fearful dreams, and you awake, and this that pass over. when you, that's where you're taking refuge in the Buddha. You take you taking refuge in this quality. First is externally, you look at the image of the Buddha, and that image of the Buddha reminds you that he had the little world sitting inside you. That's what I mean. Taking refuge, the Buddha inside myself. That is the gist of taking refuge. You nothing take refuge in this, what you call metal, or bronze. It reminds you something inside you. This is what we call nyikthe tamba. Nyikthe, that means the unity qualities in you. Nyikthe, the oneness in you. Nyikthe tamba, the oneness of the three Jews. Oneness. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And Dharma now is become the path for you. The teaching is turned into the path. The Dharma is the teaching of the Buddha. And that teaching of the Buddha is laid the path for you to walk on that. That's why you take refuge in that. So the gist of the Dharma is what? Insight. Wisdom. Insight. And this wisdom, this insight, shine the path for you so that you don't make a mistake on your path. Sometimes you're making the mistakes up and down, but when you have the wisdom, and that wisdom shine the path on you so that you don't trip. What? When you have, for example, you have a flashlight. If you don't have a flashlight, you can be tripped, but you have a flashlight, and the flashlight help you, right? So that you can see clearly what is under your feet. So you're making a mistake, you can be fear the rope, and you say, "Oh, it's a snake," and you run away, and you scream. But if you have the light, you have the wisdom, you see, "Oh, that's the rope," and you are calm. Put it in yourself and continue your path. That is. So for example, when you practice and you have a lot of pain while you sit and you may be afraid, right? But you have the Dharma, you have the wisdom of the Dharma, and you have the confidence that, oh, this will be passing away. This will be impermanent. Even this pain, but this gives some time. This will be go away. Because you have the wisdom, you have to understand, right? But if not, you'll be very afraid. If I continue to do like this, then I have a lot of pain, right? See? The wisdom. That's why you go there and take refuge. It's bring you, generate the faith and the confidence in you. The more you walk on the path, the more solid faith and confidence in you. You have a direct experience. So in order to experience this, the Buddha say, come and experience for yourself of the Dharma. In order to experience that, the Buddha say, come. The Buddha don't say that, you know, you just do it. He say, you come and experience the Dharma. That means you practice and experience the Dharma. Đến để hiểu, đến để thấy. To experience the Dharma directly. And once you have that, you have faith. Right? That is where you have confidence and faith in your path. So the Buddha don't say that, just come and blindly I tell you what to do. But you say, come and experience the teachings for yourself. In the teaching is not that. Buddha don't say don't believe me, don't believe me, or just tell, do what I say. See, he's a wise, he's a very democratic teacher. Democratic. He never say that I only possess knowledge inside. No, you not know. He said, he don't say that. I already complete, but you are on potential. You have the potential. And you, if you practice like me, you directly experience the teaching, you will experience the same thing that it's experienced. Then he's very democratic. He's very open. He don't say that, I'm the only one. No. In Buddhism, we have this book called 10,000 Buddha. 10,000 Buddha. And I do a lot of prostration every time, 100 or 2. I do that because I don't ask him anything, but I do that to cultivate in me, to pay respect, gratitude, but at the same time, I cultivate the quality of awakening in me. So you don't do that because you want to beg him to give you something. Beg him to give you insights, transmit you insight, compassion. No, the Buddha don't do that. The only thing the Buddha tells you is to show you the way, and you have to walk, and you have to directly do it for yourself. Nothing, you don't get nothing for granted. In our society, you have nothing for granted. That's very Buddhism. Nothing you get, you have to work for it. Directly experiment for yourself. And now you go to take refuge in Sangha. Sangha here is include, we call Pham Bhatan. Tana means saints, that the people already attain enlightenment, and the people on the path, and the people who are vernacular human being. Pham Tan. Include all Sangha. In the Sangha we have monk, lay male and lay female friends. So it's four, we call fourfold communities. Fourfold communities. But the gist of the Sangha is what? You have to, that is language. Now we have to go to the gist. Harmonious energy. Fourfold Sangha had to be in harmony. And the other quality is stillness. Quality. When you have harmonious, then you have some kind of stillness in that. Carry the energy of stillness. Harmonious. And all this here, the quality of awakenings, the wisdom and insight quality, the harmonious, have to be go in hand in hand. And all of this had to become oneness. Oneness. Together. It's not separate. We call nyikthe kanba, oneness. Nyikthe. Oneness of the triple gem. Te here means the nature, the reality of it. Oneness of the reality. Nite. And this nature or this reality is in each of sentient beings. Each of sentient beings. We are potential energies of this in us. So the more you practice, the more this energy is reveal itself, uncover. We are being pushed around by what? By three kind of poisons. We always, in this life, we are make up of that, and we push around. We've been pushed around by that. These three we call psyche. Three. What is three poison? You all study.
Attachment, anger.
Yes, that's three. We always push around by this.
Attachment, anger,
delusion, or
ignorance.
And look, we look deeply in your life. We are somehow or some degree, we have been pushing around by these three. In Vietnam, it's called sai sự, sai khiến và điều kiện, những cái tham sân si. We are going to work to survive. And we are under pushed around by this energy of either attachment, right? Grasping. And when you have, that's why when you take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you try to be awake of this energy so you can take your life in your hand. Take control, in control of your life. But otherwise, we have been taken control by three poisons. Attachment, aggressive violence, ignorance, or not knowing. So the more you deeply practice in your practice, the more you contemplate, you see, you have the insight, you see of this insight. So the more insight or the more awakening you are, then you less be pushed around by all this three poison. You have more control of your life. So taking refuge means to is to awake up all this energy in you. In you. Externally, you see the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha, and internally, you try to wake that energy up in you. And that is the initiation to walk on the path of freedom.
So you had the four conventional areas,
mm-hmm.
taking refuge. So really, they're both the same.
Mm-hmm.
Still trying to take refuge, but in totally different. I don't know if it would be manifestations or with a different focus, but you still want to be safe. You still want
sure.
to be free of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So your body's going to make you free of suffering, and your friends will make you free of suffering to a certain extent.
Yes.
And then the other two, the karma being last.
Mm-hmm. So when you able to know how to take care of the four conventional. Then you move on to the three. They are not separate. You do one step, for example, you want to be go the first kindergarten or first grade, and then you have to make some learning some basics from the kindergarten and then move on to the next. But they are not separate. Look at conventional, they are separate. But look at deeply, they are not. They connect. So you say that, oh, I don't want to take a four conventional refuge, I just want to take a three, then it's not. Then you're skipping.
But don't the three reflect back to the conventional? In other words, if you observe what the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha,
mm-hmm.
As far as the description of the body and how we're supposed to take care of our body, that mm-hmm. will reflect back on the conventional.
Yeah, that's conventional. But you have to take care of that. That's, as I said, it's a raft to help you, to carry you to the next stage, to cross to the soul where this you will meet this here. But without that, you cannot have this. Without this body, healthy body, you cannot have the healthy qualities, noble healthy quality. Right? So to initiate on the path of this, that's why in Buddhism it's very crucial as a beginner to know that to learn about three refuge and have a clear understanding about three refuge so that you can make a firm decisions on the path. You planted the seed, but you have to learn about it. And then after you take in three refuge, then you move on to take the five training, for example. Right? Slowly, you learn. But this is the very core fruition.
But, you know, when people take the refuges, you know, when they're introduced to the idea of the refuges, early in the practice, I don't know, maybe I was the only one who didn't mean a thing to. I didn't understand it, though.
So that's why you have to learn. You have to find the teacher or someone to explain it to you and see what it really means, right? So you really, when you understand, you say that we have a conviction, strong conviction about that. That's why this, as I say, the Buddha say that, come and learn and experience. That's what the Buddha means. He don't want to blind you of this. But they say, come. I show you. And you experience it. Mm-hmm. He's very compassionate. When I look at this, he says, oh, that's a compassionate father. Mm-hmm. You know? He says, when I look, I say the word come, and I show you, and you experience that. And I have an image of the Buddha. You know, just close your eye and you say that, oh, he's just like holding your hand. And I show you. Just like you are as a mother. And your child is believe in things. Come, you hold your child's hand and say, here I saw you. Eat it. And you will see. Just like as a mother. This Buddha is like a mother. Love the child dearly. Love all sentient beings dearly. Like that. So this is the very important and very core understanding in when you study Buddhism. That's why I think we share with you the very beginning of the Tuesday class many years ago. And somehow if you I share with you but you don't contemplate, you don't look at it, then you forget. And someone somehow remind you back again. So in the teaching of the Buddha is not force anyone to learn his teaching, but he just only show you the path. And because he knows that you possess all this in you, potentially. So he's trying to show you that you have this. But because we have been, life after life, you have been covered by many layers of mud, of ignorance, of not knowing. So the more you practice, you know, one day at a time, month at a time, you slowly uncover all this mud, take it out. And transform it, turn it into insight. And what is this? So that's why it's very three qualities, or we call that's what we call triple gems. That's why it's gems. Gem in a way, not in a way that you go there, you go in the ocean and you discover a lot of pearl jewelry. You buy it and you know you have you're making rich of that, you know. What gem here is something is you inside you. Just go back and discover that. That's why it's nobody can take these gems from you. Even the Buddha. Even this God come never even take you. Nobody one can steal from you. But you have gem, you have pearl, you have a lot of jewelry at your house. Next, you know, when the robbery come, and they will steal from you, and it's dangerous. But here it's not. You see, so when you say gem, it's something that's very valuable, but have no form of it. You only able to experience directly. I might describe, but you not may not taste it unless you practice, unless you really taste the harmonious in you. In your body, in your mind, harmonize together. And things at ease itself. And you see everything, and everything become beautiful. And that's become gem. But if your mind was to be disturbed, your mind is chaotic, then jam is not jam. Jam become mud. Yes. So when you look at the picture of the Buddha outside, we call Hien Tien, Tam Bao, and the Dharma outside, and the Sangha outside. Hien Tien is there, Hien Tien, Tam Bao. But slowly you practice and you discover the three gems in you, the gems day by day, day by day, moment by moment. So if you practice, even if you are in Christian, you still have three gems, but the way they explain it a little bit different, maybe from Buddhist. Say three Trinity is only God, not you. The Son, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But in Buddhism, say no, everybody. Doesn't matter who you are, even the child, even the animal. Explain different. It's not a total authority from the Buddha. But in Christianity, I think they have a total power by God, Creator. It's different. So a different way of explaining it. But when you look deeply, you can see that even Christianity, you think that they can become a Buddha. They can become a Buddha. Pope can become a Buddha. You know? And the bishop can become Buddha, and their member become a Buddha. It's, they have that, potentially. Not only God, but if you come to Buddhism, not only Buddha. And, so you have a freedom, choice to make yourself become a Buddha.
The Holy Spirit is the Buddha nature.
Yeah, the Holy Spirit, you know, the Holy Spirit, you call, they have a triple gem, Trinity, which is like three gems in Buddhism. Even in Hindus too, you see, Vishnu, Krishna,
Shiva,
yeah. So we, it's name different, but how you explain it, how you going to accept it, that's different. So you explain it on the in a position of authority, then use power, impose on other, then it's different. So when you look deeply into the teachings of Christianity or Hindu or Buddhism, you can see there's some commonality there, but how we approach it, that's different. How we practice, then different. That's different. So it doesn't mean that if you're Hindu, you cannot become a total enlightened. Or it doesn't mean that you're a Muslim, you cannot talk. You can. In the view of Buddhism, that you can. If you can be, even though you are Muslim, you can become Buddha. So everyone is a Buddha. Yeah? Look in that way. So we don't try to condemn anybody or to make anybody feel hurt. You know? If you look in the light, in that kind of light, then you pay respect to everybody. Even whatever we do, we very carefully in the concerns of their joys and their happiness, right? Because we know that they relate to us. We are not an isolated entity, but we are in very much connected to each other. One decision can affect the whole world. And then how can you say that? Obama decisions can affect the whole world, right? How can you say that you are a separate entity? So if you look in that light, you respect the environment, you respect the people around you, And you never have any, you remove your discrimination. Right? You will have different outlook, different form, but coming to the gist, the essence, we're the same. We wish to be happy, we wish to be joy, and no exception, animal or humans. Right? So today I just share with you the four conventional place of taking refuge that we all have, and the four noble qualities that we can take refuge in. And by each day we try to make that become more, bring that in more light. So the more we have the more noble quality in us, the more happy we are, and the more open we are, the more accepted, tolerable we are. So it's the degree of our practice that's different. So if you have any question later, you have to share. And this afternoon, you say, what is your normal quality? Or what is your conventional place that you think? So that's for you to contemplate and put in practice day by day. So the more you go deep into practice, the more you have a lot of things to share. You can say anything with any connections. So the four conventional refuges, I just, when I in my practice, I come up with that. The three noble qualities in the teaching of the Buddha. It's very foundations, the very foundations of the practice of in the Buddhist beginning on journal of total enlightenment or total freedom. So we will stop here and we will have our lunch together in here. So I would like to conclude my talk here. If you have any question, this afternoon we can share and bring it up, share with the group. That's it for your time. So once again, thank you very much. Thank you, Mark, for reading the story. Thank you, everyone, for listening. So I will invite to sound the bell so that we can conclude our Dhamma talk here. So please sit back and take a few deep breaths.